And welcome back to another edition of the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed, alongside always awesome and terrific co-host Jonah Tolles. Jonah, I have to ask you, there were a lot of things that happened in the NFL, but it kind of was disappointing with the NFL trade deadline. And of course, this is the portion of the week where we do get into some NFL chatter once again. We are the Locked On College Football Podcast, but we're going to dabble into some NFL and NFL draft news, of course, throughout the week, because this is just a football podcast per se, I like to say. It's not just college football oriented, but I have to turn it over to Jonah. How's everything going today, Jonah?
It's not like anything happened with the Cowboys this week, did it?
I believe they acquired Michael Bennett, but there's I don't think there were any other acquisitions or in the media.
Nothing revolving in all-pro safety back to the Cowboys, a need that they've had for the last decade, but nothing's really happened over here.
We're not talking about Darren Woodson, are we?
Oh, get out of here.
We are starting off with Jamal Adams, of course. That was the big news of the trade deadline. But nothing came to fruition between Adams, or the Jets, I should say, and the Cowboys, even though rumors around Twitter were swirling everywhere that a deal was close. There was some compensation that was floated around. But with Jonah being our resident Cowboys fan, I have to get your opinion. And I know it kind of was like fool's gold. I know Christmas is very close, and that would have been like Christmas for you guys, sure. But it did not come to fruition. But I have to ask you, I want you to kind of break this thing down from both angles. Yeah. And what I mean by, what did the Cowboys miss out by not acquiring him, and what would have happened, or how much of an upgrade would Jamal Adams have been for the Cowboys secondary?
Yeah, so I'll tackle the easy one first, and that's what Jamal Adams would have provided to the Cowboys. The Cowboys have had a big need at safety for over the last decade, ever since Roy Williams kind of fell off a cliff, for example. So ever since then, the Cowboys really haven't had that playmaking deep safety or even that physical presence down in the box, which was really what Adams is best at. And now that he's an all-pro safety, he's one of the top two or three safeties in entire NFL, in my opinion. So that's what you're getting. He would have filled that void. And even though, you know, you're giving him a lot of draft capital, he would have probably been the missing piece to make your defense elite. But that's the holdup. It was the draft capital. And, you know, I don't want to say that I have multiple sources, but it just be repeating the same thing. But multiple reports came out saying that the Jets wanted either two first-round picks or a first-round pick and two second-round picks. And, you know, as a Cowboys fan with PTSD on those kind of trades, I know Amari Cooper thing worked out with a single first-round pick, but you go back in time, 20 years ago, the Cowboys traded two first-round picks for Joey Galloway, and he never had 1,000 yards with a star on his helmet. Then fast forward 9 years later, we traded essentially the entire 2009 draft class for Roy Williams from the Lions, and he was one of the probably one of the most disappointing Cowboys of all time, to be honest with you. So I have a little, you know, I want to hold back on giving that many picks. And I wrote an article for the Draft Network following the aftermath of that, basically saying that it was the Dallas Cowboys made the right decision by not pulling the trigger there, because the value of the safety position, even though how good Jamal Adams is, he is the best box safety in football. But it's the simple fact that he's a box safety, or safety in general, that you're not giving up two first-round picks or a first-round pick in your next two second-round picks. If it was for Jalen Ramsey or Khalil Mack, sure. They play at more premium positions that are more important and more valuable in today's NFL. But to me, Jamal Adams is a great player. He's probably the best safety in the NFL. But to me, it's just not worth the cost. And I think the Cowboys did the right thing. 10 years ago, Jerry Jones would have absolutely made this move. But I think he's learned from his mistakes in the past, as I mentioned earlier. And bringing in smart front office guys like Will McClay, bringing his son Stephen Jones in, it's kind of helped calm him down. I think he's kind of entrusted his decision-making to his son and Will McClay and the brain trust of that front office. I think it's a job well done by Dallas front office to kind of, you know, shop the market a little bit but not get a little out of control. I think they did their part. And like I said, you know, it can be like Christmas morning when you get Jamal Adams, you know, when he arrives to the facility. But when draft day comes, it's the worst Christmas ever, because now you don't have any presents to open.
Right.
And, you know, even though we got Amari Cooper last year, and he's an all-pro receiver, and I'll do that trade 10 times out of 10, you know me, the draft guy, man. It sucked not having a pick in the first round. But at the same time, you know, if it was for the right value, of course. Jamal Adams makes this your goal is to win Super Bowls. Jamal Adams puts your defense over the top. But it's not worth mortgaging the future for the safety position is one of the most, I think, replaceable positions in football. And that's not to say, you know, Jamal Adams isn't a great player. That's just saying that I think I can grab a safety in the first or second round of this upcoming draft without mortgaging my future picks for another player. Plus, you're going to have to pay Jamal Adams. That's another part of this that a lot of people don't understand, is that the Cowboys are about to have one of the most expensive rosters in football.
Yeah.
So you're about Dak Prescott about to get $40 million a year. Ezekiel Elliott just got the biggest running back deal of all time. Amari Cooper is going to get big wide receiver money. Lyle Collins just got paid. You got Tyron Smith and Travis Ferguson on big deals. Zach Martin just got paid.
Byron Jones.
He's probably going to get franchise tagged. So you're talking about big-time money to a lot of big-time players. Jalen Smith just got paid, and you're going to have to pay Leighton Vander Esch in the future. So it's just one of those things where you're going to have to nail draft picks on cheap contracts for them to, you know, fill those outside roles. You can't just pay – I guarantee you when they got Jamal Adams, they weren't going to be able to afford him probably the next 2 years. He was only his third year of his rookie contract. But 2 years later, are you going to even be able to afford him? So it's one of those things where the Cowboys need to keep their draft picks because those cheap contracts, those draft picks play on, are so valuable. That's why a lot of teams, when they have a rookie quarterback on a rookie contract, like the Kansas City Chiefs, go all in on that window. So I think it's really important for the Cowboys to hold on to their draft picks at this time, especially without how much money they're investing into those young stars.
And I 110% agree. And that's really the downfall of drafting well. Those draft picks eventually grow up and they're going to want their worth. And that's what we're seeing with the Cowboys right now. We've seen them pay Jalen Smith, and Dak Prescott is eventually going to get his money. We've seen Ezekiel Elliott get paid. Lyle Collins just got paid. And they still have very talented veterans on the roster like Tyron Smith and a host of other guys as well. So I think the Cowboys by far have one of the most talented rosters in the NFL. But on the flip side of that, of course, these guys don't want to get paid eventually. And I think that's what the Cowboys are running into right now. But I want to look on the flip side of this thing with the New York Jets. And I honestly like what they did as far as shopping Jamal Adams, just because this team has so many weaknesses. And like we talked about, safety is one of the most disposable positions in the league, meaning that I don't want to say you can find these guys off the street, but
right. They
don't really have a huge impact as per se, like a quarterback or a left tackle or an edge rusher or anything like that. I think as far as the priority, as far as paying them, I think they're way farther down on the totem pole. And with the Jets, they have a huge need at left tackle, edge rusher, and also cornerback, some more premium positions that you need in today's NFL in order to really contend in that division, of course, if they want to contend in the AFC as well. So I think the Jets have a long way to go, though. That roster is just a mess right now. It's a shame to say that just because of how much they spent in free agency with C.J. Mosley and guys of that nature, Le'Veon Bell, and some of the money that they spent to go out and get these guys. And here they are sitting at, I believe they're 1-6 right now or something like that, 1-7 along those lines. So they're really struggling right now, and they were labeled as the offseason champion in a sense just because they spent all this money in free agency, and they even almost got Anthony Barr before he backtracked and went back to the Vikings. So I think they have a more talented roster than what their record indicates, but I just think overall they're just lacking at the most important positions right now. So I understand why they were shopping Jamal Adams, just because I think that roster is a long way away from really competing right now. They just wanted to see what they could get for him. And let's say they could get 2 first-round picks for him from the Cowboys. Maybe they could use that to improve their roster in the future. And I know that's going to come with some backlash just because of how important Jamal Adams is to the roster. But I just don't think a safety is going to make that big of an impact and help them that much in their playoff chase just because of how far that roster is behind right now.
Yeah, and I'm 110% on board with you right now, because it's one of those things where I think every franchise that's in the position of the New York Jets or in that kind of purgatory range where you kind of have your quarterback, like Sam Darnold, you think he's the guy, but you know your team is not equipped to go to the playoffs, you should be going full Miami Dolphins right now.
Right.
Go full fire sale, because you're not making the playoffs. So just trade those expensive contracts you signed. This is a valuable lesson I learned from my dad when I was like 6 years old. A bad football team stay bad because they offer, you know, expiring guys who play past their prime, big contracts. And that's what the Jets are doing. And the Jets, I'm not saying Le'Veon Bell and CeeDee Moser are past their prime, but you're giving these guys big contracts like you're going to make the playoffs this year. You're not. You need to have a long-term focus. I think they should be doing what, you know, Miami's doing, what kind of rebuilding. Cincinnati's are looking to the future. I'm sure we'll get to that later. But it's the Jets have to have this long-term goal. I'm glad they were having a fire sale because that's what they need to do. They need to kind of rebuild this whole and retool this whole roster around Sam Darnold if they think he's the guy. So getting as much picks and as much capital as you can to rebuild the roster the best way you can. And they have a new GM over there. So to give him the best, you know, chance, I think he's going to try his best to kind of retool that roster this offseason and kind of do it his way. But at the same time, this is a team that needs to go full rebuild. It can't sit on the fence of, well, maybe we can improve, make the playoffs, or maybe we can. No, you see, go full nuclear and just go get those draft picks and build your roster from the ground up.
We know the whole Adam Gase thing going on right now with the Jets. I think that might be a one and done situation with them. So we'll see what does end up happening there. But it's going to be an interesting offseason for them just because I think they're hitting head first towards a top five or even top 10 pick right now. But we'll see what does happen with that. And Joe Douglas and Adam Gase, they have a relationship that goes way back. But I think that's really going to be tested this offseason just because that was not Joe Douglas's hire when he was hired as the general manager there. So we'll see if he does want to handpick his own guy and how he wants to build that roster from the ground up. But nonetheless, it's going to be very interesting to keep an eye on that matchup and this, or that team, I should say. And that's one team that I definitely will have a very, very close eye on. But I want to remind the listeners about Roman. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. The secret to longer lasting sex. Get $10 off your first order of Swipes and free 2-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOn.com. Again, that's Roman.com/LockedOnNFL. And that's Locked On NFL. So the next topic I want to get to, and this is one that I cannot wait to debate. We're going to debate between the Redskins and the Bengals. And it's two teams that I think are in very similar situations as far as just how putrid their ownership is, the dysfunction that is associated with them. And the Redskins, they don't have a head coach right now as far as what we know for 2020. Zach Taylor is the new coach in Cincinnati, but he is struggling right now. The Redskins have one win, I believe it is, while the Bengals are still winless at this point. But the Bengals made some waves this week with the benching of longtime quarterback Andy Dalton. And we know how long he's been there. He signed a massive extension in 2014, signed a six-year $96 million deal in 2014. And the thing about Andy Dalton's deal is that it comes with a $17.7 million cap hit next year, but there is no dead money attached to it. So they can get away from that deal if they want to. And I thought they probably should have shopped him at the trade deadline, especially considering what they might possibly could get for him. Now, there probably would have been a few teams that may have been interested in him just because I think he's a borderline starter in the NFL, but I think he might can keep some teams afloat throughout the league, and there probably were some teams that maybe would have given up a mid to late round selection for him. But nonetheless, I thought he came out and he had some very strong words in the media this week stating that, and I don't want to misquote him, but basically he was saying that if they didn't have any plan for me prior to the trade deadline, then why didn't they just trade me instead of just benching me 3 hours, basically telling him 3 hours before the trade deadline that they were benching him, and it was on his birthday. How about that? Which is crazy. They ended up benching him on his birthday. So not the best birthday present for Andy Dalton. No. But they turned the keys over to Ryan Finley, a guy we both are very familiar with. He was down at the Senior Bowl last year. He was the fourth-round pick for them a year ago. Had some promising moments at NC State. We know about the off-field drama that happened with him at Boise State prior to that point. But he had a bounce-back few years at NC State. Had a very successful career there. Ended up being a fourth-round selection. And we'll see what he does have the last few games going down the backstretch of the season. So first, I want to get your thoughts on Andy Dalton benching. And then just what was your overall scouting report and how did you feel about Ryan Finley coming out of NC State this past season?
I think it was a necessary move. I think you have to see what you have in Ryan Finley. And it's not to say Ryan Finley is like the guy. Like I don't think Ryan Finley is gonna force you to pass on a guy like Joe Burrow or a Tua Tagovailoa. But at the same time, I think you gotta let your guy play, because if you draft a guy like Joe Burrow or Tua or whatever it is, Finley's probably never going to get an opportunity to show what he does. If Finley does the opportunity, it plays well, you can trade him in this offseason for a good pick, and you can continue that rebuild. But I think this is a necessary move. You know, Dalton is not the guy. And I'm not going to say, this is intentional tanking, but because you're already bad. You haven't even won a game yet. But still, I think going this route is the best way to go. I do think they should have shopped Andy Dalton. I do think that they kind of – I'm with you. I think a team would have traded a mid- to late-round pick for him just to keep things afloat. I mean, like a team like Kansas City perhaps, or just someone just to keep the ship up, or even Baltimore or Denver with Joe Flacco getting hurt. So it's just one of those things where I'm a little shocked to say that Cincinnati didn't shop him. But I think the move to Ryan Finley is a necessary one. But I want to ask you a question regarding – Zach Taylor, before I get more into Ryan Finley. Do you think Zach Taylor is safe? Because let me say this. You know as well as I do that Zach Taylor was a panic hire. Yeah. Every coach they were looking at in that offseason was hired right before them. Like, they interviewed all these different guys, and they didn't hire him until after the combine, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And that to me is a red flag. So he wasn't their first option. Second, third, fourth, fifth. He wasn't even there. Like, their plan F. This guy. So I'm just wondering if the Bengals go like 1-15, 2-14. I just wonder if he's going to lose the locker room as such a so quickly that the front office is going to be like, hey, this guy wasn't our first option anyway. Let's just start over. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think with what the Bengals ownership has shown in years past with Marvin Lewis, I think he's going to be safe just because of that. There isn't an organization besides the Steelers that is more patient with coaches than the Bengals, just because Marvin Lewis was there for 16 or 17 years or something like that and didn't win one playoff game. So with Zach Taylor being such a young coach, I think they're going to let him figure it out in a sense, and they're going to let him and general manager Duke Tobin go about this thing and just see over the long haul if they can figure it out, just because – I think the Bengals actually have talent on their roster. They're just not living up to it right now for whatever reason. And I haven't done a deep dive as far as their film or anything like that just to see what they're doing schematically. But Joe Mixon has taken a massive step back this year. We know A.J. Green has been injury-plagued for the past few years. And they have some other guys. Tyler Boyd is another one that looks very promising as well. But some guys just aren't living up or playing up to their potential. Billy Price is another guy that I think Pro Football Focus has him graded as the worst offensive lineman in the NFL. And this guy was a first-round selection. We know how good he was at Ohio State, even though he tore the pec at the combine. We know he was very talented coming into his NFL career, but they just haven't lived up to that. And that's something that you see with the Bengals, just talent development just hasn't been the best there. But maybe things can change under this new regime. So I think they're going to give him a chance over the long haul, just because they're an organization that has shown to be fine with being mediocre. And that's really sad to say, but the Bengals ownership seems to be completely fine with being mediocre in the middle of the road. So I don't see why they wouldn't let Zach Taylor try to keep this thing afloat and see how far he can go. Listen, over the long haul.
To be fair, I think Marvin Lewis had something on that front office.
I would not doubt that at all.
Are you kidding me? How did he stay that long?
No idea. We'll never see that again in NFL history.
There's like rumor every year. It's like he's on the hot seat. And then, like, I think it was like one point, like, he like turned in his resignation and then took it back and then coached the next year. It's like, what is going on? Yeah, the Bengals were a mess. So, yeah, you're probably right about that. But getting into Ryan Finley, I actually liked him quite a bit coming out of the draft. I know a lot of people on draft Twitter didn't really like him because he doesn't really have that one big trait that stands out. He wasn't really a big arm guy. But he's kind of like, how I see Jake Fromm now. Like, he's kind of like you talk about the golf player. He's always going to put it in the fairway. He's never going to, get you birdies or none of that. But he's not going to get you double bogeys. I think this guy's going to be – you know, a straight down the middle par guy, good accuracy, smart guy, improved decision making, and a much better athlete than giving credit for. He can maneuver in and out of the pocket. He's not a statue. I know he looked like one at NC State, but he's a much better athlete than giving credit for. But I like him a lot, and I'm not also very much experienced in the pro style system. So I think he could have some success. You just have to go, Joe Mixon, he's a very good running back. He's had a step back, but I still believe in his talent. Tyler Boyd, I still think he's one of the best slot receivers in the league. I mean, you got some good weapons around there. Is the offensive line terrible? Yes. I mean, but let's be honest here. The Bengals roster has some players. I mean, Carl Lawson, William Jackson III. These are players that can end up being, you know, some of the top players of their position. So the Bengals, it's not like the Bengals are barren of talent. They have some playmakers. I just feel like there's just no confidence in that locker room, and there's no rally for these guys to kind of step up. This year really just seems like a lost year. So hopefully Ryan Finley can kind of rejuvenate some of these guys, his quarterback change. I think it was a necessary move to make, not just for Ryan Finley's progress, but kind of almost for the whole locker room to see some change.
I 100% agree with that, just because this could end up being like a Gardner Minshew type of situation. You just have to see what you have in some of these guys, and Finley is still an unknown going into the year and going into the situation, but maybe he comes out and he has a Minshew type of luck going on in a sense, and I don't want to take anything away from Gardner Minshew. He's looked really good, so I don't want to call it luck, but maybe he has a certain type of run, and his development is just well ahead than the draft slot that he was picked in, with Minshew being a sixth-round pick. He's played well above those expectations. And maybe we see the same thing with Finley. We know that Zach Taylor is known for the work he has done in previous years with quarterbacks. Maybe Finley can be his latest pupil that he does get to play above expectations. But I like that they're throwing him out there, just because they go into the draft really knowing what Finley is, and we know that Dalton isn't the future of this team. So, and either way, no matter how Finley plays, that shouldn't keep them away or steer them away from drafting a quarterback high, just because we know this team is probably going to end up with a top three selection, especially after the Week 16 showdown against Miami, which should be nationally televised, by the way. They should flex that game. But that's
Sunday Night Football, baby.
That's something we can debate another day once we get closer to it. But the Bengals are definitely an interesting case, and I'm excited to see how Ryan Finley does play, especially down the backstretch of this season. And, you know, I'm a quarterback guy. Being a former quarterback, I just love seeing how guys react to the certain situations that they're in. And I'm right there with you. I was a big fan of Finley coming out, and he's a guy that definitely is a quarterback that is the sum of his parts. He had some really good weapons at NC State, Kelvin Harmon, Jacoby Myers, just to name a few that he was throwing to with the Wolfpack when he was there. And they had a really good running game and Garrett Bradbury there at center. So he had some talent around him when he was at NC State. And I think the Bengals do. Now, they don't have maybe that same type of high-end talent as what they had at NC State as far as the upside of some of those guys that he was throwing to. But they have some weapons, like we said, Joe Mixon, Tyler Boyd, and Tyler Eifert, some of the other guys that they do have on that roster currently. So he has some guys to throw to. Now, what is very important with him is just staying on schedule. I think that's the biggest thing that he is going to have to battle, just because when things go off the rail and when he has to become creative, I think that's when we start to see some of the warts with this game, just because he isn't a great overall athlete. So I think that's something that is going to be big.
How dare you say he's not a good athlete?
I don't think he's
a 4.73 40-yard dash, my friend. Say otherwise.
Combine time and actual time in the pocket and outside of structure is completely
different. I'm a big proponent of play speed and tape speed over time speed. But at the same time, this guy does not get enough credit or respect to his name for how athletic he is. But I will say this. The biggest concern I have with throwing Ryan Finley in is that this Bengals offensive line is the worst offensive line in football.
Yeah,
and my biggest, on my scouting report, my biggest weakness on Finley was that, just like you said, when things go off rails, his decision-making clearly takes a dip. And you see a lot more interceptions, throws into tight windows that aren't even open. Ryan Finley caves under pressure when the pocket collapses, and it's just – I wonder if this is the right situation for him, equipped for him to succeed in. But if the Bengals offensive line give him time, which they haven't been all season, then maybe there could be a chance where he has that Gardner Minshew kind of effect, and that quarterback change can really rally up the locker room. But let's not forget, this Bengals offensive line is atrocious, and that will play a big factor in the next coming weeks.
Without question. And the Bengals definitely will be a team that is going to be interesting, not just right now, but also heading into draft season, just because they're a team that has been up and down with some of their draft picks, and they have hit on some the past few years. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, there are some guys that have bottomed out completely. But the next team that we want to get to is the team that we are comparing them against, and that's the Washington Redskins, that has not failed with staying in the headlines from the offseason to now, with the whole Trent Williams saga, Dwayne Haskins, and of course, just ownership being in flux. And this is by far the most dysfunctional team, not only in the NFL, but I think in pro sports. And I don't think it's even close. Just the way they have handled this Trent Williams situation, and also the Dwayne Haskins dilemma with his practice reps and when they do throw him out there in the game. But I just want to get your overall thoughts on how they've handled the Trent Williams situation and just your outlook for the Redskins going forward.
Man, this is a disaster. This is like, oh my goodness. Like, I don't know how they've fumbled this so badly. Now, here's the thing. Trent Williams is under contract. He's not holding out for money reasons. He's holding out simply because he does not want to be a Washington Redskin. That's troubling, to say the least. Especially when you just invested a top 15, 16 pick on what you believe to be your next franchise quarterback in Dwayne Haskins. Boom! The coaching staff and scouting and the scouts did not want. It is public. Those guys wanted Daniel Jones. But the front office, Daniel Snyder and all those boys, they pushed over to them Dwayne Haskins. So that's the first sign. Just that alone of owner pushing scouts and coaches away, saying, hey, draft this guy, is a problem. Because now the coaches aren't going to be on board with him in practice, and it just creates a whole mess. So now you know that he wasn't even their first option. And to put that public, now Dwayne Haskins knows that, and it just creates a whole bad perception. So, yes, it's a complete disaster over there. And it's because the Redskins do have some young pieces. I thought they had a good young – they had some good players they drafted. Terry McLaurin, he's – honestly, if he had a good quarterback throwing to him the football – he might be leading the league in receiving yards right now. He is burning every – even Stephon Gilmore, when they played the Patriots, he was really giving him some trouble. And Stephon Gilmore, I think, is one of the top two or three corners in football right now. So you're talking about the Redskins. They have some players who can play. Quentin Dunbar is really evolving into his own. I mean, you have some guys that can play. But this organization is so dysfunctional from, you know, when they had Jay Gruden to this front office and this ownership. This is the worst ownership in terms of – infringing on football matters that I've seen in a long time. And you just see it all the time with the Robert Griffin III trade, where it was too much for him. And then whatever the whole situation when he got injured and how they handled that. And ever since then, it's just been an absolute disaster. And the fact that Trent Williams doesn't want to play, and you drafted your franchise quarterback not knowing Trent Williams is going to play, who is your blindside protector, that's a bad thing. And throwing Dwayne Haskins in and winless and unwinnable situations and throwing him in there when he throws three interceptions and whatever, it's just going to hurt his confidence. And it's only going to affirm the coaches saying, oh, well, we knew Dwayne Haskins wasn't going to be that good. And now you run into the offseason kind of like Josh Rosen and the Cardinals last year, where, you know, do you draft a quarterback? We roll Dwayne Haskins because that coaching staff doesn't like him. I mean, they're probably right. Having a new coaching staff. So the ownership, here's my problem. They're probably going to bring in a new coaching staff saying, hey, you need to develop Dwayne Haskins. And that coaching staff's like, hey, we don't want to develop Dwayne Haskins. We want to draft Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa. I'm like, so bad. We invested. Is this Daniel Snyder front office? They're so stubborn to admit they made a mistake. I'm not saying Dwayne Haskins is a mistake yet, but they just infringe on football matters when they don't need to. And that has been the key to so many of their problems over the last 10, 20 years. So it is a complete disaster. And it's one of the few teams in this league that I would not want to be a general manager for. because you are controlled by that owner. And that owner really is like, you know, he is the guy who's making the decisions, not you. And you don't really have free reign on your team. And I'm just worried that, you know, whoever takes that job there has true control over the draft and this rebuild.
And that's a perfect segue to the next topic that I wanted to get to. But staying on subject with both of the two teams that we just talked about back to back. So I'm going to put you in a situation. Matter of fact, I'll give my thoughts first. So the question that we're going to answer is, if you were a GM and you had to choose one of the two teams to take over, who would you rather take over between the Redskins and the Bengals? I think by far it's the Bengals for me, just because
100%.
There's going to be low expectations with them. They're going to be very patient with you, and they're going to allow you to form this team with their own identity and after exactly how you want to mold it. But on the opposite end with the Redskins, you have a dysfunctional owner that is very, very self-centered, that is going to want complete control of everything that you do. And really, when things go wrong, he's going to blame you and send you in front of the media to really face the facts of what happened with the situation. Even though the Redskins do have more talent on the roster, I do agree with that point. I just think the Bengals have more upside, and I just think you're going to get more alleviation with them and more patience with them. So I will go with the Bengals over the Redskins. What about you?
It is very simple, Jordan. It is very simple. 10 times out of 10, I'm picking the Cincinnati Bengals. It's like I hear the phone call from the Cincinnati Bengals saying, hey, you want to be our general manager? I'm not even waiting to take the Redskins call. Like, the Redskins called me. I'm like, hey, yeah, I'll consider it. But I'm not really going to consider it because the Bengals just offered me a deal. I'm done with the Redskins, man. I would never want to be the GM of that team as long as Dan Snyder is the owner, because I know that he's going to control me, and it's one of those things where he has no trust in you whatsoever to make decisions, because he's always going to be stepping over you. So I want to go to a job. I'm a general manager. I want to go to a job where I have free reign and free control over what my roster looks like. And the Bengals, like you said, they've shown patience in the past with general managers and coaches saying, hey, do your thing. Let's refill the roster. If it doesn't work out, we'll part ways. And I like that. And so, you know, for me, I think the Bengals have a good roster. It's not like the Redskins have a completely better roster than the Bengals, because they don't. The Bengals, like I said, William Jackson III, I think, could be one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. Carl Lawson, I think, can still be one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Geno Atkins, still one of the best interior pass rushers in the NFL. So you got some players who can play, and if you sign back A.J. Green, that'll be a big thing for, you know, you get to a Tagovailoa or a Joe Burrow. You have Tyler Boyd in the slot who you just paid. Joe Mixon is a good running back, but he has had a terrible offensive line play. So if you can end up, you know, retooling some of your assets, get another high-round pick, draft an offensive tackle to go along with your quarterback, man, I think you can really reshape this Bengals roster into a playoff contender. I think this team can really be turned around quickly. Whereas the Redskins, man, I think as long as – and it sucks to say this, but, you know, as long as Dan Snyder is the owner, man, I just don't know how this team is going to turn around and back into that playoff contending team we saw a couple of years ago.
And I floated this out on Twitter just because I wanted to see some difference of opinions on the whole debate that we're talking about right now. And I was really surprised to see some of the overwhelming answers being the Redskins. I just don't think they were thinking about the whole entire picture as far as ownership, right, upper management. And they were just looking at the current rosters between the two teams. But
right. As
an entire picture, folks, you have to look at everything, just because being a general manager isn't just about constructing a roster. You have to think about a coaching staff, of course, ownership that you have to work hand in hand with, the whole entire scouting department, and just how much control you have of the entire operation. And I just don't think the Redskins general manager's position just really gets a lot of control over the roster, even though we've seen Bruce Allen have a lot of control over that roster. Dan Snyder is the man that's running the show. Make no mistake about that at all. And we saw that exactly like you alluded to earlier with Dwayne Haskins. And there were some reports that came out around draft time that he wasn't necessarily the guy that everyone wanted at the 15th overall selection, but he was the one that Dan Snyder wanted. And that's what the team ended up going with. So little things like that are what makes me steer clear of taking over the Redskins. And I think it's a no-brainer to take over the Bengals.
Think about this. Imagine this. Imagine putting in a year's worth of work on this draft class and saying, hey, Jordan, listen here, man. I think Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow are the top two quarterbacks in this draft. If one of them falls to us, like Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins deal, if one of them falls to us, then we're going to draft him. And then all of a sudden, Dan Snyder comes over and says, no, we're drafting Jake Fromm. It's like, wait,
exactly,
wait a minute.
What happened. Yep.
It's like we had Jake Fromm at QB 12 or whatever it was.
Right.
We're not drafting him. And Dan Snyder's like, no, I want you to draft Jake Fromm. What is that as a general manager? You're putting in a year's worth of long hours and long work. I don't think a lot of people understand how much these front office people work and these scouts work every day and every week for this, you know, for what they do. And they put in so much work to do this. And then their owner comes in and says, no, we're going to draft the unequivocally worst player over this guy. And according to your scouting reports and what your scouting staff agrees, what are these board setting meetings for? Every team has board setting meetings where they set the draft board about a month before the draft. Why are we even having these meetings if Dan Snyder is going to come in and say, hey, we're taking Dwayne Haskins over Daniel Jones or whoever it may be? It's mind-boggling to think that someone would pick an organization – would be, you know, would willingly pick an organization over the like Cincinnati Bengals, for example, that has that kind of ownership. I think it's just an unfortunate situation, to say the least.
Yeah, it's really mind-boggling just what the Redskins have done to this point, how they treated the entire Trent Williams saga, Dwayne Haskins situation, Jay Gruden. That organization is just a mess right now. But very fun topic to discuss between the Redskins and the Bengals, two teams that really are in similar situations as far as really looking towards a top five selection right now, maybe end up even being a top three overall between the two. Maybe we see one of those teams out of those two end up with the number one overall selection. But it all comes down to that. Red Star, I have aside that Week 16 matchup between the Bengals and the Dolphins. I think that could be the battle for the number one overall selection. But like I said, that is a really good discussion to have. But, folks, that is just some of the topics that we are going to discuss on the Locked On College Football podcast. And you can go ahead and take college off of this podcast just because we are going to be locked on football. We're going to debate every
locked
single level.
Locked on football, baby.
We are going to be debating NFL, college football, and even a little XFL in the spring once we get to that point. But that's later on down the road. So we're going to talk about all different types of levels of football. But we're going to have interesting topics for you guys every single day. But once again, thank you for listening to the Locked On College Football Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Reed. He is my co-host, Jonah Tolles. We are signing off. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you like what you hear, make sure to tell a friend about the podcast and leave a 5-star review. Thank you guys for listening.